Ayatollah of rock and roller.
Yes. 1, 2, 3, 4. I cannot get over your flat hair. It's really distracting.
31 Thoughts, the podcast, is brought to you by the next generation GMC Sierra trucks. And you know who GMC should really feel good about this week on this podcast?
Who's that?
Emil Delitzsch. And here's why. Emil has sacrificed his entire schedule to get these podcasts done. As we are sitting here at the CBC studio getting this recorded, and our fingers are crossed because who knows if we're going to finish this thing tonight. It is 10:57 Eastern. We tried to do this last night. Okay, and failed because 15 minutes into the podcast, the Peter Carmano snooze happened. And then you turned into Elliot Friedman, half man, half phone, and you vanished. And for good reason, and understandably.
You know, it's been one of those weeks. Obviously, there's a lot going on. I didn't get 31 Thoughts, the blog, done this week because so much was changing. And I really thought it wouldn't have been as good as it should be and can be. So I apologize for that. I didn't get it done, but... You know, we didn't want this to drop and then be irrelevant minutes later. So we struggled getting it done, and we're hoping that tonight will be the night.
It might just be a quick one, and I think Elliot and I both fully expect we will be talking to you again very shortly when this marches, this Bill Peters situation marches to the inevitability that we all believe it is marching towards. In the meantime... There's so much that we could review on this thing, but I think everybody who listens to this podcast is probably already caught up on the story. So I don't know how much reviewing we need to do, although we probably should talk a little bit about the wrinkle that happened last night, because this thing has a lot of tentacles and is touching a lot of organizations and a lot of teams as well, not just the Calgary Flames, but also the Chicago Blackhawks, the Carolina Hurricanes, and through Carolina... out to Seattle with general manager Ron Francis. Where are we at right now?
You know, I have to tell you, if I was Ron Francis, I would be out there. Peter Carmanos, the former owner of the Hurricanes, has said that if he had known what Bill Peters had done hitting the players in Carolina to Michael Jordan and another unnamed player, that he would have fired him. And like I said, if that was me, I'd be coming out and saying, oh no, this isn't the way it went, or I'd be explaining why I did what I did. But I don't think that's going to happen in the short term. I could always be wrong, but I think it sounds like everybody's going to wait. Now, what I don't know here, Jeff, is if that means there's a big NHL investigation coming, or the NHL has said not yet. But I've had people say there's more to the story and eventually it will come out. And, you know, the whole thing about this story, Jeff, has been, especially with the way the Peters situation in Calgary has gone, is I think a lot of us out there are, how hard is it to make this decision? He's admitted in his statement, even if he didn't like his statement, he admitted the Akeem Alou story was true. Mm-hmm. How hard can it be? But everybody I know who's a lawyer says this is the real world, this is how things go, and just because it's sports doesn't mean you can make the law go faster. And I think that's just what, unfortunately, we have to live with. This is all going to take time.
We live in a culture now where technology has given us an unreal expectation of how quickly things can be fixed and how quickly things need to happen.
Yeah.
So this does seem painfully slow for a lot of people that live their lives, as we all do, the majority of us anyhow, on the internet and on social media. Could this be a situation right now where in everybody's best interest, the NHL has said, let's keep a lid on this right now. We don't need anyone talking publicly. Brad Treliving has done his best to update people. We saw what happened after Buffalo. One statement, didn't take questions and left.
We are not trying to stall or take time or drag our feet. It's a serious matter and it's involving serious subject matter, and I just want to make sure that we are doing a thorough job in looking under every stone, rock, and doing all the things that need to be done. So the letter tonight is part of this that we will obviously review, and I'm hopeful that we will have an update for you tomorrow. I'm always hesitant to put timelines on things, but again, I hope you can appreciate the we're just trying to do everything we possibly can to make sure we do this right and we get all the information that needs to be getting. So with that, I just wanted to make sure that I spoke to you tonight and let you know we're aware of and got the same material you have tonight. And we'll be back to you soon with once we've concluded all of our investigation. Okay.
The NHL was swift with a response after the information became available, after the Kemalu tweets. Is this a situation where the NHL has said, right now, the best thing for everybody publicly is to not say a word, other than the bare minimum, which Brad Treliving feels, and rightfully so, compelled to do?
Well, if you take a look at this, who's made the most comment? It's been Kemalu, who's now, as we know by his statement on Thursday, is going to meet with the National Hockey League. It's a couple of Carolina Hurricane players. Michael Jordan said something. Jiří Tlusti, and I had reached out to Jiří Tlusti because I heard he might have some things to say. He declined politely. He was very nice about it, but then he spoke to a reporter overseas. Mm-hmm. And I don't have a problem with that. Maybe he's more comfortable doing it there as opposed to here. So it's been a lot of the people who have something to say that how they were mistreated who've come out and said things. The Hurricanes spoke about it briefly on Wednesday morning in New York, and now they said they're going to move on. I do think that people from the NHL point of view, where they say, we want to hear what you have to say, they want them to do it internally first. And that is going to be Bill Peters. I believe he's going to be interviewed by the league. The Chicago Blackhawks are going to have some explaining to do. The Carolina Hurricanes, I think, are going to have some explaining to do. Previous ownership, I don't know if new ownership will be involved. This didn't happen under Tom Dundon's watch. Mm-hmm. But I do believe that that is going to be the process. And, you know, I think there's a lot of people who look at it and say, well, are they going to sweep it under the rug? I don't think it's going to be possible to sweep this under the rug. It may not be as fast as everybody likes it, but I think eventually we're going to get some answers onto who knew what and when.
The National Hockey League Players Association, through all of this, and we know that Kemalu has met with the NHLPA, the NHL Players Association has encouraged players not to go public with their information, but rather to bring it to the Players Association. I look at that and
the horse is out of the barn.
That was not 5 minutes ago. That was a million years ago in internet time.
Well, why did a lot of this happen, right? The Mike Babcock story came out. A reporter, Terry Koch in the Toronto Sun, printed the story. But the Kemalu situation began because he went to social media.
Yeah.
The Carolina situation became known because Jordan went to social media. You can't expect people to do anything but that. People want to be comfortable in their own voice. They want to be able to tell their story themselves. And they will go to social media and they will say it. Daniel Carcillo, been very active on social media. Nobody's telling him what to do. Brant Myers came to the defense of Daryl Sutter, did it on social media because he wanted it to be in his own voice. That's what we're going to be chasing now. We're all, and you know what, to be honest, if I was involved in such a situation, God forbid, I hope I never am, I'd want to do it in my own voice too, whether it was Twitter, whether it was Instagram, whether it was Facebook, whether it's TikTok, whether I put a link to a blog through my own social media feed. I understand that. I get that.
And you want to do it on your own time when you're comfortable, not on someone else's time. And that's, why I understand that.
We have a Carolina player here at one time who has said that he does not want to talk about it. And I'll tell you something else. I heard there was a player in the Carolina dressing room when that thing happened with the unnamed player who went absolutely bananas. And I've reached out to that player, and he has completely ignored me, and that is his right.
Right.
And I'm not going to barrage them with text and information either. I sent one or a couple, and
I said it's on your time.
I'm not going to barrage them. Yes.
Is this then a tipping point for all these players? The Marner story led into the Kemalu situation. We've seen other players. Patrick O'Sullivan was on Twitter talking about stories he had already discussed in his book and elsewhere. I do wonder if this is the beginning of a chain of dominoes with hockey players and their former coaches.
One of the things I think is going to come out of this is, and I was talking about this with someone today, and he wonders if the NHL, the Players Association, and the alumni are going to go out with some kind of blanket, we want to know everything. If you have something out there that you feel emboldened now by the reaction of the players, the support of the players who've come out, we want to hear about it. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's that. The other thing I'm wondering about here, Jeff, is there going to be some way, I don't know if you can centralize it or what you can do, of whenever there's an incident, the league wants to know about it. You know, Akeem Alou's situation with Bill Peters, that happened 11 years ago. And they're going to try to find out who in the Blackhawks knew what.
Mm-hmm.
And this situation from Carolina was 2015-16. They're going to try to find out how everything was handled. And I think what we're kind of wondering here, and I think it's too early in the process to say, but does there have to be a central location sort of through the NHL where the NHL can know this happened with this person? Because, you know, one of the biggest questions that's going to be asked here is, how come nobody knew about this? Now, in Toronto...
Hold on. How come no one knew about this, or how come no one reported this?
Both.
Because there are players, you know, that was, oh yeah, I heard that story. Oh yeah, I knew about that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think to your point, is there something that the NHL in concert with the PA can set up, a unique office or,
yes,
a portfolio for a person or a group within those two organizations whereby you can have an avenue to posit that information?
And I'm not saying that's going to happen or it's going to be talked about, but I've had a few people mention it to me that they could see, mm-hmm, a discussion about that. Does the NHL need a brain center where all this stuff gets sent? You know, like the thing with Toronto, Babcock and Marner, you know, that story, you know, a few of us had heard it. And I know myself, I pursued it and it was downplayed. Like I was told it wasn't what I'd heard,
yeah,
and it wasn't what was eventually reported. Now, later, it got out. But like I said, like I don't think I was the only reporter who looked into that. With Peters, I can honestly say, I mean, I didn't know the Akeem Alou story, and I didn't know the stories about what happened with the two players on the bench. And I don't know how widespread they were. I mean, obviously, people in the organization knew them, but you know, how much were those particular stories known in hockey?
Mm-hmm.
I never heard them, and I don't know how many people who did.
I wonder what's next as far as setting up certain protocols that could deal with potential situations, the likes of which we're trying to unravel. And these are Gordian knots we're trying to all pull apart here. And the minute you untangle one knot, another one appears. Are questions about player-coach relationships going to be more of a focus of things like exit interviews at the end of season for players? Will there be a formalized way that the NHL not just encourages but forces general managers to do background checks?
I just wonder
what programs are, because I can't believe that at the end of all of this, whenever this is finally over, and it might not be over for a long time, that the NHL and Players Association won't have new checks, balances, whatever, in place so things like this don't happen or at least are minimized.
Well, before our Wednesday night hockey game, I sent a few notes around to people who would know, and I said, are we going to see anything different? I think the answer was too early to say. So I don't know if the answer is different now as we tape this on Thursday night. But just the fact I was talking with someone who talked about that central area for information, at least ideas are being thrown around. I do think that we are going to see something. I just don't know if I have the answer to that yet. I mean, there's a lot of hard questions that are going to be asked here. You know, this is embarrassing for the National Hockey League, and they don't like it. And we're all sitting here wondering what else is going to come. Like, does anybody think this is over?
Every day something new comes out. That's what makes it so dangerous to do this podcast right now, because as you mentioned off the top, the minute we release it, could be two more grenades going off.
Yeah. So, I mean, we don't really know where we're going here. But I do think that the league and the Players Association and the alumni are going to do is they're going to try to send the message out. If you have something to say, you come to us,
mm-hmm,
and we want to know about it. And I don't think even in that way it's about them controlling the message. It's them just wanting to know what's out there.
Do you have a thought on the Bill Peters letter?
I didn't like it. But again, you can't help but look at all of this and wonder if we're going into some kind of litigation.
And well, I don't think Bill Peters wrote that himself.
No. Well, that's the thing. Like, you're not releasing that statement without some lawyer looking at it. So I understand from the point of view, like, you look at that statement and it's not good, but I also know it's lawyered. So I've brought this up, you know, could he be facing a lawsuit? And people say to me, well, the incident happened 11 years ago. Is there still anything that could come out of that? Is there a statute that has been surpassed? I don't know. I'm not a lawyer, but you have to at least protect yourself for the possibility that something could come. Mm-hmm. And it's hard not to look at this situation and say there could be something coming.
Where's Calgary? The Flames, where are they at right now? This is an organization with a hockey team that is not close to being where they were at last season, where they were top team in the Western Conference. This is a team that has now been rocked with the biggest scandal of the year in the NHL. This is a team that's looking to build a new rink. This is a team that's looking to attract new sponsorships. This is a team that would still very much like to have people like Jerome McGinley around the organization. Thank you very much. I can't imagine any of this is sitting well at all for anybody.
Look, they're going to make a coaching change. We've talked about this. The world's divided into two groups of people, those who are lawyers and those who aren't. Those of us who aren't, we look at this and we say, why so long? Yeah. And those who are lawyers, they look at it and say, that's the real world. But it's going to get done. And they acted as swiftly as they could. They suspended him right away. I mean, from what we know now about what it takes to do this, could they have acted any faster? It's not like they brought him back. You know, the interesting thing is that they were really struggling in the last little while. It's clear that Peters was unhappy most of the year. The players were unhappy most of the year. We were all debating whether or not there was going to be a coaching change anyway. Maybe it's what they needed.
Final question. Your thoughts on where we're headed next?
I don't think anybody knows the answer to that question. What's still coming?
More accusations.
Well,
I think, honestly, Elliot, I think that this is the floodgates have opened a little bit, and now all of a sudden it's all going to start coming out. And it's going to be guys that have done interviews years ago and months ago or 5 minutes ago and shrug things off. Now, all of a sudden, those will be given a greater spotlight.
I agree. And you know what the thing about it is that I look at this Daryl Sutter thing, for example. You've got people accusing him. You've got another player defending him and saying, what a great thing he did to me.
It's possible for both to be true, by
100%.
The way. Like, we tend to think in this culture right now that it is heroes and villains. It's not that way. People can be great to some and horrible to others.
We talked about it last week about Babcock.
Yeah.
Like, you know, one of the things that Babcock took the most pride in away from the rink was all of his work in mental health. And then people are going to hear that story about Marner and they're going to say, well, that doesn't make sense. And I think it says that, you know, a lot of people are very complex. I mean, and that's the thing. We're going to have a lot of stories. You're going to see people come out and go after people, and you're going to see other people come out and defend them. And we're going to have to go through this and see where it takes us. But in the long run, you know, the thing I heard a lot this week was there's dark days ahead, but you hope it leads to better things in the future. And that's all you can hope for. There's dark days ahead, but you hope it leads to positive change.
What's the Winston Churchill line? When walking through hell, it is best to keep moving.
Yeah. When you're going through hell, keep going.
31 Thoughts, the podcast. Here we go. Elliot, as we sit here and do this, we've just finished up doing Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey Thursday edition with the lone game on the schedule, the New Jersey Devils and the Montreal Canadiens. New Jersey beats Montreal 6-4. Carey Price, not a good night, again. The Habs have now set a franchise home record, a dubious one, one they're not proud of, by surrendering 20 goals in 3 home dates. Squandered a 4-goal lead Saturday against the Rangers, got stomped against the Boston Bruins on Tuesday, and then this one against the New Jersey Devils on Thursday night. And in the middle of all of it is this question. What's going on with Carey Price?
You know what would scare me most if I was the Canadians, their players, or their fans? Was the frustration. How often does Carey Price show open and anger and frustration? Smashing his stick and then giving it the Bo Jackson. That would frighten me because that says to me that all the work he's doing, it's not paying off for him. I told the story in the pregame show, but when Jacques Martin was the head coach of the Canadiens, he once told us that he didn't like Carey Price's practice habits. He didn't like them at all. He said that when he coached Patrick Waugh, when he was playing poorly, he'd be out before practice the next day, sometimes not even with pucks, and he'd see him just go through his process. And Carey Price learned that he had to be better at that, and he is. He's a really good worker, hard worker, and he was out there earlier this week. Kyle Bukauskas showed the video with Stefan Waite, the goalie coach, and Cale Fleury. And then he makes that big save at the end of the second period.
Oh, and Palmieri, that was great.
Long pass turning is Coleman. Picking in behind Petrie, and the pass cross ice, and Price makes a tremendous save.
Oh, what a stop by Price! Unbelievable!
Oh, with 9 seconds left, Price absolutely robbed Palmieri, and the fans get on their feet. And Price needed that.
And you're thinking, all right, he's back. We're down a goal going into the third, but we're going to be okay because Carey Price is back. And, you know, that's the thing. Like, you just look who they played. They lost New Jersey twice. They lost to Columbus. They lost to Ottawa. They lost to the Rangers when they had a big lead. I mean, Boston's killing everybody. So what do you do? But, you know, he's your MVP. He's your best player. And, you know, the other thing I know when I'm looking at Montreal is they've been looking for a left shot D. I think one of the guys they were looking at was Alec Martinez, who's now out with that laceration. Mm-hmm. But they have to go get somebody. I know Bergevin has always preached patience, but another year out of the playoffs is not acceptable. Jobs are going to be on the line. The other thing you might do is maybe you play, you know, I noticed the Devils tonight, they play two righties together.
Yeah.
Subban and Vatanen. Maybe you play
They've been doing that lately.
Yeah, maybe you play Weber and Petrie. I mean, you have to do something.
Talk to coaches, and you could say, you know what, the game is so fast right now, you don't have that luxury anymore. Like those Red Wing squads that all had left-hand shots, you could do that, but now the game is so quick. Even something as simple as, you know, when you skate the puck around the net, if you go to the left side and you're a right-hand shot, it takes you that extra half second to make that pass, and you don't have that time anymore.
Oh, I'm all with you, but I think you just have to try something.
I'm with you. I think Bergevin has to be at the point where, okay, we're making a move. We have to do something here. And here's the question. I know they want the left shot D, but is the move with the guy that was just at the Bell Center on Thursday night?
Taylor Hall?
Yeah.
You know, first of all, it's unlikely he's going to sign during the year.
But is this about anything else other than the year and getting to the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those scary trades. It's one of those deals you make if you're doing it for a rental and you're like, oh, what did I give up? I know this is a bit of a dated reference, but you're worried it's Larry Anderson for Jeff Bagwell or Dole Alexander for John Smoltz. Like that.
Hello,
that's
younger demo listening to this podcast.
Older fans will know what I'm talking about.
You know what? You know what, and again, conspiring against you, but it's a good thing for him because it's a wonderful thing for the organization. If the draft wasn't in Montreal, maybe it's easier to get rid of your first round draft.
Yeah, but you know what? Like I look at that, like, you know, like I understand you want to keep your first rounder because you got the draft in Montreal, but come on, like that can't be the reason. They're going to have to do something. And Bergevin doesn't really have a history of swinging for the fences during the year, but maybe this is the year. I heard they were looking at Martinez.
Mm-hmm.
He's hurt now. You know, it makes sense because he's not a rental. He's got another year. But also, you know, Hall, New Jersey's going to create an auction for him, right?
For sure.
You know, I mean, who's in that? Colorado?
I would still maintain Columbus, but yeah, I'm just looking at the teams that have the cap space and think they might have a shot.
But they're doing it to sign him, right? Like, they're not giving up what they have to give up short term. I got to think Dallas.
You'd mentioned Nashville. As Nashville slides, you want, and David Poyle's not shy.
No, but you know the other team? Like, I think St. Louis, but I don't know if St. Louis is going to have what New Jersey needs. And I mean, we're all Edmonton. Like, we still think they're circling around.
Well,
there.
That's why you just cheer for the great story, and that's what.
But
that's what
anyway, like,
I want to get to Edmonton because I think they do need, like, how well they're playing. I think yes. Edmonton, the heat is on to make a move.
I don't know about that, but I understand what you're saying. You know, New Jersey, I don't know if they're in a hurry right now. I think you want to do it as soon as you can, but I don't know if the market's really set itself yet.
Boston Bruins, meanwhile, a couple of signings, Wagner and Coyle. We'll get to Krug in a second here, but your thoughts on these two deals?
Well, first of all, I'm really happy for Chris Wagner, a guy who's been on waivers. Like, you know, I always root for guys who do it the hard way. And he's become like a guy who... He annoys people. He's a Bruin. Like, you look at that guy, and that guy's a Bruin.
There's a lot of guys on that team that look like Bruins. Charlie Coyle looks like a Bruin. Sean Corrali looks like a Bruin. There's a lot of guys that look like Bruins.
But to me, like, Wagner is an annoying, like, he just drives you crazy, pisses you off Bruin. And he fits. And I guarantee that guy looks at it like, whoa, I'm going to get 3 years at over $1 million a year. I'm taking it. Where do I sign? Mm-hmm. And that's perfect for them. Coyle, I mean, what a story that is. I wonder if he could have gotten more if he went on the market. But, you know, Minnesota, it was an up and down situation for him. And, you know, I think he wanted to be more there. I think they wanted him to be more there. Someone in Minnesota told me that there was one time I put him in my notes. I heard some rumors about him and I checked and they were true. And they said, like, guys called them, like, are you really going to deal Charlie Coyle? When you look back at Minnesota over the last few years, and I know they want to change this now, I don't know if it was the dressing room. I don't know if it was the way they were doing things. But you're going to look at Charlie Coyle and say, why does this guy look so much more confident and so much happier in Boston than he did in Minnesota?
Yeah.
And don't just tell me it's because he's a Massachusetts guy. Like, I don't buy that. And he's a part of what they do, and he just looks more confident on the ice.
It just might be the byproduct, too, of playing with a better team. And let's not forget, like, and you mentioned that room, too. I mean, that room has Bergeron. That room has Chara.
Yeah.
Like, all of it.
And I know people, Marchand drives people crazy, but from a improve yourself and get better point of view, like, there's nobody. Nobody has done better than that guy.
And
except for maybe Pasternak might surpass him.
Well, Pasternak's trending 50 and 50.
Yeah.
Like, could you see that, by the way? Pasternak 50 and 50?
Oh, I think so. Those guys don't even look at each other when they pass the puck. It's ridiculous.
I don't know that I've seen a team make more blind passes like that tape to tape in Boston.
It's like the Bruins' chemistry rivals the chemistry of me, you, and Amel. It's like the same.
Yes, hand to glove.
By the way, I wish we could send out a photo of Amel tonight. His hair is like flat. I've never seen this before.
That was quite a greeting you gave him when he walked into the studio today. Amel, your hair is so flat. Not like, oh, Amel, thanks for staying up late to help us with the podcast.
What it compares to.
Well, you have a whole rest of the podcast to figure that out. mentioned Nashville a couple of seconds ago. You have a thought on what's going on there?
The tourist
and
thing.
Kyle Turris,
you know, it's interesting, you know, so David Poyle holds a media conference the other night to explain what's going on with Turris. They can't deal him. His value is too low, and I don't necessarily think he even wants to be traded. I think the guy wants to play. I think he wants to play in Nashville. I don't think he's asked for a trade. He wants it to be there. I mean, at some point, he'll welcome it because he just wants to play. But they get all these injuries, and they go to Daniel Carr, who's a great guy.
Call up. It's great, great moment for him.
And he's a great guy. Daniel Carr, really nice guy.
Yeah.
And he comes up, and he scores the winning goal in the shootout. I mean, I just look at it, and, you know, they tried him in the wing in the preseason. And I thought it was okay from what I heard. And they moved him up during the regular season. Someone just said to me, when you play on the low lines there, they want you to be safe. He's a guy who likes to carry the puck.
Yeah.
He's not safe. And it just doesn't fit. I'm amazed. Like, I'm a big Kyle Turris guy. I cannot believe how it hasn't worked out there.
Same. And this has been such a weird 12 months for Kyle Turris. I still don't have a handle, although people kept telling me, oh, it's a favor. Oh, it's a favor. There's something behind this. The World Championships and named captain.
Yeah.
And how well he performed. And every time I would check in on Kyle Turris, it would be, yeah, that's a favor, looking to do something. And then nothing.
Yeah.
And it looks like right now, nothing.
Yeah.
It's just frustration for Kyle Turris.
Yeah.
But don't you get the feeling that something has to give in Nashville right now?
Well, I think they're better than they are.
So do I.
You know, they just got two wins over St. Louis. They get a point. They lose to Vegas in overtime. Maybe they're finally coming. It's interesting. You know, in Toronto, when the coaching change was made, what did they talk about? Too many shots coming from the points. I don't know if it's exactly the same in Nashville, yeah, but they get a lot of shots from their D. Now, their D are basically Rovers, but it's interesting to me. Like, they need more from their forwards.
I can't explain Winnipeg right now because I look at this situation and I say, how? And then I stop and I console myself, or reassure myself rather, and say, ah, it's going to fall apart any second now. Am I right or wrong?
Does the goalie fall apart?
That's the big one, right? Because
he's having
a
great year.
If he normalizes, and if, you know, if all of a sudden the Superman cape falls off Connor Hellebuck, all of a sudden I see this thing just crumbling like a house of cards.
I hope it doesn't, because I like to root for good stories. And I think the Jets, to me, they're a team that's greater than the sum of their parts, okay? So this year they had every excuse. Like, I thought they were a Stanley Cup contender coming into the year,
yeah,
okay? And when the season started, I had guys who were telling me they aren't even going to make the playoffs. You had the contract dispute with Laine, you had the contract dispute with Connor, and now Byfuglien. And Paul Maurice walks into training camp and says, I know we got all these issues, because those two guys weren't signed yet,
mm-hmm,
but we're going in as happy people. I'm going to go in as captain positive.
Listen, if the Winnipeg Jets can pull this thing off, he's in your Jack Adams ballots all day long.
And he's, unless he's signed a mystery contract that none of us know about, yeah, he's still without a contract for next year.
That's shocking to me.
But I just think he's handled it so well. And you look at their team, you know, Morrissey's in and out.
Yep.
How many of their defensemen do you look at and say they're top four NHL defensemen?
Oh, they're always out man-gamed. Every single game that they play against, like, just do man games. That blue line against Winnipeg's, yeah, it's tilted.
Wheeler's playing center. Captain.
He looks good, by the way.
Yeah,
at center.
Captain.
That, on that second line, he looks real good.
But how many top NHL centers do they have? Two? The guys who deserve a lot of credit, well, first of all, they're all playing hard. You know, and that's all you can ask. Those guys are playing hard. They're trying. They're competing. Maurice deserves a lot of credit. The players deserve a lot of credit. You know what? I think Laine, like, you know, to me, there was two things about Laine this summer. One was the contract, and one was, you know, how is he going to play? And, you know, I think the people with the Jets, whether it was Cheveldayoff or Maurice or someone we don't know, and Laine's reps, Mike Liut, and I don't know if he has someone special overseas who knows him well, they all work together to say, forget the money for a sec. You can't play like that anymore. And he said, well, I want to play more. And they said, okay, we'll let you play more, but you have to reward us by doing other things. And he's done it. And, like, I see an organization that's full of people who are saying, we're going to step out of our comfort zones to do things that are better for the team. And the coach is trying to preach it and be positive about it. I hope they do well, because I think it's a great story.
And we focused a lot on Laine, certainly the goals and the playmaking now. I mean, he looks like a different player with the passing and the playmaking. And while I'll come shy of calling him a 200-foot player, is he a 150-foot player? I don't know. But the one thing that stands out to Laine when I watch Winnipeg Jets games this year is he's hitting people. Like, he's trending like to like 100.
He's a big guy.
I know he is.
Next to him,
he's. I remember the first time I did was at the World Cup of Hockey. Like, oh, he's enormous.
Yeah, he's a big boy.
And I said to myself, "Wow, it's a good thing for the rest of the NHL that he doesn't like physical contact." That's not true this year. Like, he's using body on. He's going to get like 120 hits this year.
Yeah.
I don't ever thought I would have said that about Patrick
Laine. I don't really
Laine.
Care if he even hits anyone, as long as he, you know, gets in the way or causes problems, but he's decided, no, you know, I know how strong I am. I'm going to do it.
All right. I mentioned Edmonton earlier, and as this story continues, and it's a wonderful story. I mean, Dreisaitl and McDavid, that tandem is just captivated, not just Edmonton fans, but I think
last Sunday night, hometown hockey, Edmonton, Arizona for first place in the Pacific. Like we all predicted.
But I mean, it's a wonderful story and they're so much fun to watch and it's must see TV. Just get these two guys on the ice together and 3-on-3 is automatic. Flip whatever game you're watching off and watch Edmonton because Drysdale and McDavid are going to put on a show. Given that success, I still think that Ken Holland owes it to the team this year and that marketplace to make a move that'll help this season.
I could see it.
Insulate.
What are you really giving up, though? This is my question. Okay, you want to reward the team, that's fine. You want to reward the marketplace, that's fine. But let's be honest about, you know, what you are. You're getting better. You're having a good year. You play with structure. You've bought into what everybody's asking you to do. But how good are you really?
Compared to the rest of the Pacific?
No, in general. Like, are you trading a first rounder?
Listen, I don't think.
Are you trading a first rounder?
If I'm Ken Holland, I would really consider it.
Oh, I don't know. Like,
this is a
Obviously, it depends on what you're getting.
This is a marketplace that has felt false started and burned for how many years now? And finally, it's going great. It's a fantastic story, and that marketplace is totally rejuvenated.
But I think you still
have to
be smart.
Do you
want
to go back to the marketplace and say, hold on a second, guys. This is a mirage. We're really not that good.
I'm not saying you have to say it's a mirage, but what I'm saying is that you have to understand that you're still not where you need to be. You feel a lot better about yourself, and you know you're going in the right direction, but you're not where you need to be. I think giving up a first rounder, I mean, unless you're getting somebody with term.
You've got Tyler Benson coming. You got Evan Bouchard coming. Caleb Jones can be a full-time player.
I
already know what you have in Ethan Bear.
For a rental? No.
I don't know what the marketplace is.
Okay, I'm just saying, if you're giving up a first rounder, I better see somebody who gives you value for a long time.
Now, right now, that first rounder is going to be a pretty low pick.
Right now, but what if you get knocked out in the first round of the playoffs? And you're the draft genius.
This is a deep draft. 2020 is a deep draft.
So I wouldn't.
You don't like it, eh?
I don't, but show me the deal. Like, sure. If you get a first rounder for Taylor Hall signed for 8 years, all right. Okay.
I mean, that would be a marvelous
If you're
story,
trading a first rounder for a young player who's under team control for 4 or 5 years, okay, maybe.
But you think generally Edmonton stands back?
But I'll tell you this, if you're trading for like a veteran winger who might cost you a second or third rounder as a rental for this year, yeah, I could see that. Why not?
I look at it that this is a team that is vulnerable to the injury.
Yes.
One of those two guys. And I think you owe it to that squad for some
insulation. If one of those two guys gets injured, like, forget it. You could trade for half the league and it's not going to matter. That's the game you play. You know, the thing that I look at, too, is in the playoffs, and I'm sure Oilers fans are like, come on, like, really? But let's say you get into the playoffs. Are you going to be able to play McDavid and Dreisaitl like you're playing them now?
Every second night? No.
And there's no 3-on-3?
Yep.
Are you going to be able to play those guys like this?
No, and everybody's going to game plan for those two.
Yeah, so realistically, how much are you going to be able to add that's going to get you to where you need to go to win 4 rounds?
See, I look at it and I say to myself, give Ryan Nugent-Hopkins something here. Give Ryan Nugent-Hopkins something more to work with so you do have that second wave, that second
I'll
line.
Wait for it and see it.
All right, you're not buying it.
No.
You're not picking it up.
Because normally you're like the guy who opens up a van and says, do you want a pair of speakers? That's what you sell.
Dallas Stars, thoughts on this? You talked about this at the beginning of the season. You said, correct me if I'm wrong, this is a team to look out for.
This is my Stanley Cup pick.
This is a team that's made some great moves. They stretched the team that would eventually win the Stanley Cup to 7 games and overtime. Watch Dallas. Early, wasn't looking good for you, Friedge. Now,
They lost to Chicago, got shut out the other night.
The streak's gonna end,
they played not bad, just didn't score. I think they're going to add. They're all in.
Mm-hmm.
I like them a lot.
What? They already have the best tandem.
I think they
need 1-2 goaltenders.
I think they
in
need like some speed. But they're a playoff team. Like, they're going to grind you.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I could see them adding some speed.
Speed up front?
Yeah. I wonder if they'll be in on Hall.
Dallas adds Taylor Hall as a rental. Load up. I want to finish with one final team.
Okay.
3-0 now, and you're off to Buffalo Friday
afternoon.
I'm
driving down with Brian Burke on Friday.
It's going to be a long
car
ride.
Is anybody going to have a worse afternoon than
Black
me?
Black Friday.
Depending on the border, could be 5-6 hours in the car with
long,
Brian Burke.
Be sitting there hearing stories you've heard over and over again. Yes, Brian, I heard
and
that
25%
yes.
of them might be true.
That's right.
By the way, can we say on the podcast what he calls my blog?
Go for it.
31 Turds.
Yeah. Every week. Are you guys doing 31 Turds after this show? How was 31 Turds this week? I read 31 Thirds the other day.
Can't say it on the air, but I think we should share it on the podcast.
I laugh every time he says
it's great.
It's hilarious.
So Berkey has a couple of things like he'll do. Like when we finish a segment,
yeah.
Like if I'm on with you, he'll go, good job, Jeff.
Yep.
And then on Saturday nights, good job,
you.
Ron. Good job, Dave. Good job, Kelly. it never doesn't make me laugh. Like it always makes me laugh.
He's a funny guy.
Yeah.
Toronto Maple Leafs, 3-0 with Sheldon Keefe.
They look dynamite. The thing that interests me the most almost is the practice stuff.
Skills.
The Here's skills.
Daryl Belfry on the ice a lot. And
well, the thing is, if you look at MLSE right now, who's their most successful team?
Raptors.
You take a look at the Raptors, and they have Pascal Siakam, if you're not an NBA fan. I don't know what people expected he was going to be as a player, but not what he is now.
I'm a casual basketball fan, and even I know he's outstanding, and my kids love him.
So I have a relative who's a fundraiser for the U of T basketball team. He helps them, you know, raise money, and he put on an event for them, the men's and women's teams, and Nick Nurse was the guest speaker. And so he asked me, would you be able to interview Nick Nurse for 45 minutes at this breakfast event? I said, sure. I don't really know. I don't know him. And I think he's a pretty fascinating guy. So I was happy to do it. And one of the things he talked about was he didn't understand why any player wouldn't work on their shooting. So the Raptors put a lot of effort into this is how we're going to improve you as a shooter. Hmm. And Siakam is number one on that exhibit. He has gone from a guy who really wasn't much of a shooter to a guy who was a hell of one. And I think Dubas looked at that and said, why aren't we like that? And I will tell you, I'm not really interested in throwing dirt on people, but a Toronto player did tell me that that was something they felt was lacking, was skill development and practice. Now it's a very big part of it, and I'm very curious to see where it goes. Like, we started this podcast talking about how the culture needs to change. I think in the NHL there are some pretty innovative coaches, and you know, I think Aikens is one, I think Montgomery is one, I think Keefe is obviously one, and I think more going to be coming. And look, I think the sport's going to change in some more serious ways and some less serious ways. And I think there's people probably poking fun at what the Leafs are doing.
Always have, because it's Dubas and he's young.
And also because they're putting on a show about it. Like, there are some teams that are like, you know, like, we do skills development too. We don't show everybody. So it's kind of funny how that goes. But I am curious to see what becomes of it.
I think that's part of a marketing pitch too for free agents. Look, we're interested in making you a better. I mean, you hear Dubas talking with Ron McLean last week on Hockey Night.
In the American League with the Marlies, and then even going back to Sault Ste. Marie, we'd commit full practices and full days to individual technical development. And I think that's we've had very brief discussion of it now. Obviously, with the change happening when it did, we've been focused on trying to get in and get rolling here for these two games in Arizona, then tonight in Colorado. But when we get our chance to go through the schedule, I think we both will have ambitions to incorporate that technical development piece for all of our players. We both share the belief that every single person we have can continue to get better and continue to improve. And if we're only going to do that in the summer, we're leaving a little bit on the table. But even with Mike, after a few years, we began to incorporate that as well. So it won't be something totally new to the players.
I mean, it sounds like a junior hockey or a college pitch mm-hmm. for a player. Come to our program. We will make you a better player.
Mm-hmm.
When do you hear that in the NHL? About you individually are going to become a better hockey player with our program. That's a college pitch.
Mm-hmm.
That's a junior pitch.
Mm-hmm.
No one does that. It's join our team. We're going to be successful. Dubas is pitching players.
We have no state
individually.
Taxes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, your accountant will love us. You'll have more money in your jeans. That's a great way to end.
Well,
apologies.
Before we wrap up,
okay,
if I could just say something seriously, because we always poke fun. Amal, what was your schedule this week? So Amal is off mic. He said his schedule was insane.
Yeah.
We made him stay till after Wednesday night hockey on Wednesday, and we started the podcast, and we had to stop. We made him stay all day today on Thursday, and we actually did the podcast, and we hope it's going to last.
And he took it out on his hair, apparently.
He took it out on his hair. Amal, we just want to let you know that for all the poking fun that Jeff does at you, because you know I totally respect you without saying anything negative, we just want to say thank you very much for all the extra work you put in this week.
And
you are the heartbeat of this podcast.
If you like this podcast, you should follow Amal on Twitter. And
what's his, what's your Twitter account? No, I don't follow you on Twitter.
You don't follow Amal?
No, he doesn't put anything good out there. What's
he puts great music stuff.
I don't have
time. Thanks for inviting me to City in Color, by the way.
It just clutters my feed.
I can't believe you don't follow Amal on Twitter. Disgrats.
I'm all business on Twitter, man.
Okay, thanks for listening to the podcast this week, albeit brief. And we expect to talk to you again very soon when news breaks. We'll take you out with someone who's out of New Zealand, the master of indie mellow rock. Here's Nick Clay with Are You Man Enough on 31 Thoughts, the podcast. When the eagles run away, the lights on her face, she said, are you man enough for me, boy? My mind's in a day, you stole my breath away, and I can't, no, I can't. Depths of your soul, but man, I'd be swallowed by black holes. Now my chances of ever